and welcome back to another exciting episode of Extra Features Podcast. Today we have a fabulous film that's not new, but I've never seen it, so it's new to me. We have Jason Harvey's film, The Basketball Family. Welcome to the show.
Hey, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Let's just start off. Your film's a documentary. I want everybody to know that. It's not like a fictional thing. You've spent some time working on this.
Yeah, you know, actually, The Basketball Family was my first film. I retired as a police sergeant out here in Las Vegas after 25 years. And like yourself and probably many people that we know, you're kind of that cinephile that has always wanted to get into movies. And, you know, I had opened up my own production company about midway through my career and started doing it on the side and doing things like commercials and training videos and corporate stuff, things like that, trying to hone the skills so that one day when I retired from the police department, I could go into it full time. And yeah, back in 2016 was when I shot The Basketball Family, and it turned out to be my first feature film.
Okay, before we even get there, I want to back this up. You're a police officer, and you're like, on my break, I want to make a film. How do you decide basketball? Like, I mean, you're an intense job.
Yeah, you know what? It would be impossible to do as a cop. I mean, yeah, that's why you got to wait till you retire to do those kinds of things. But yeah, well, once you're done, you know, obviously you look for a second career, and this is what I had chosen to do. I mean, yeah, movies has always been something ever since I was you know, a little kid. I'd always wanted to do that, but you know, different things happen in your life and you end up taking a path. And, you know, once you become a police officer, that's typically what you're going to be doing for, you know, the next 25 to 30 years. It's just your career, you know, and you're right. There's not a lot of room for other things. But once you retire, sure. Now's the time to do it.
I'm going to ask one more question. I promise we'll get into your film. Did you enjoy making a film because it has intensity like your job? I mean, being a cop, I think, would have a lot of intensity at times. Not every day, but sometimes. So I think it's an adrenaline rush making a film for you because you're focusing again. You know what I mean? You have a focus.
Yeah. I mean, you know what? When you're being a cop takes a lot of attention to detail. You know, as you can imagine, there are a lot of complexities in the job that you wouldn't normally see, ironically, that we're talking about them on TV or movies. You know, you only see the glamorous part or the parts that are considered entertainment worthy. The realities of the job are not really like that. You know, the adrenaline rush is not as prevalent as you might think. You know, sometimes being a cop is kind of just a long slog that goes on for long periods of time. And you could be investigating a case, let's say if you're a detective, for years and years and years. And during that time, there's nothing glamorous about it. You know, making a film, you know, I can use a lot of those attention to detail skills, because as you know, unless you've got a multi-million dollar budget and 30 people working for you, when it's just, you know, you yourself and I doing the project, you know, taking it from the beginning of pre-production all the way to the end. Yeah, there's a lot of details that can't be missed in order to ensure you've got something that that actually works.
Okay, so we've decided. Let's start. Why did you focus on basketball? It's obviously something you would have to enjoy, I would think.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, it's just, you know, sport that I also have been playing since I was a little kid and, you know, played in high school and throughout my entire police career. You know, I was always on a recreational team and have always played. And, you know, the school that is featured in the film, my son actually went to for the 4 years prior to the movie being made. He's not in the movie. He had already graduated, but that's where the relationship started with the coach. And, you know, his name's Doug Lee, the coach. I kind of thought that here we are. It's a small Christian school in Las Vegas. Yet this guy was a 13-year veteran of the NBA. He's a professional basketball player. He was an All-American coming out of Purdue University, was drafted in the NBA in the late 80s, played for several teams. He played overseas. And I'm thinking, wow, I wonder what this coach is going to take that kind of pedigree, that kind of experience. What is he going to give these young kids? And my whole thought behind it is, how does he mentor them? How does he teach them? How does he use his own experiences as a professional player, having played at the highest level and translate that to high school.
So I guess my question is, I mean, off the record ahead of time, we discussed whether you're religious, and you said, no, I'm not. So why would you send your son to a religious school and film a basketball movie at a religious school if you don't have faith in God, I guess?
Well, no. I do. I mean, maybe you misinterpreted the question. It's a Christian school. I'm Catholic. So it's two completely different things. And you know, I'm not somebody that, you know, if you go to this school, I mean, obviously it centers around Christianity. And, you know, the reasons why my son went to that school was, you know, primarily to put him in something that would help him, you know, gain the moral compass that we thought was necessary, you know, to be successful in life. The basketball side of it just kind of worked out. You know, it's not something that we knew before he went to the school. Then, you know, to answer the second part of that question, after him going to that school for 4 years and myself being intrigued with the coach's style and what he did behind the scenes, I wanted to see it for myself. I felt that there was a story that needed to be told.
Wow, that explains a lot. See, we kind of need that in the intro at the beginning of the film, everybody, but this is what this is for. So when you're going to the coach, how do you approach him? Do you go, hey, I never made a film before. I'm really interested in doing something with your team. How do you broach it with him? Or did he know you were coming out of time?
I mean, obviously this is a guy that, you know, when your son's on the team for 4 years, you kind of develop a semi relationship with, you know. I don't know. I guess just showing him some of the work I'd done previously. Now, of course, the year my son graduated, which was the year before 2014-2015 season, I had done a team video for them. So he was already well aware of what I was capable of. That really wasn't the question. And as I said, you know, I had opened up my production company back in 2003. So, you know, had been doing a lot of different work on the side in the video production realm for quite some time. So that really wasn't a question. It was just really a matter of saying, you know, are you comfortable on camera? Because my plan here is to literally film everything. I want people to see what goes on in the timeouts, what goes on at halftime, what goes on before and after games. In a terrible loss, what are you telling them? You know, how are you keeping their spirits up? How are you motivating them to be better? You were a professional basketball player. You played at the highest level. When you're in practice, what are you teaching these kids, you know, relative to what you learned playing with the very best?
Now, how much time did you spend with the team per day? I mean, obviously, there's not a game or a practice. I wouldn't expect you to be there. Or are you doing a lot of your interviews non-practice days? I mean, how do you even broach that topic?
You mean how much time do I actually spend filming?
Yes, with the players. Well, you have interviews with the players, you film games, you have him in the meetings. I mean, how much time are you there every day?
Well, I wouldn't really say it was an everyday thing, like you said. I mean, primarily they would play a schedule of about 30 basketball games, if I remember correctly. And, of course, I filmed all of them. And then they have practices every weekday. Monday through Friday, other than game days, you know, it just kind of depends on what time we're talking about. A lot of the interviews were filmed after the season. Pretty much all the interviews actually were filmed after the season. Cause of course the questioning or things that you want to relate to things that happened, during the season. Of course you also have everything that goes on before and after the games. They had a lot of sit downs. You've seen the film, obviously. Things don't always go as planned, and, you know, certain kids kind of lose focus. And so you know, maybe a practice isn't actually a practice with a ball on the court, but instead it's a film session where you have to kind of show the team what exactly they were doing right, what they were doing wrong, and address certain issues with certain players.
So when you're addressing certain issues with certain players, did you have to coach them in some way and saying, hey, I need a bit more than what you're giving me? Or nope, you just let them talk and just took what they gave you?
Yeah, you know what? It depends on the situation. You know, when you're filming stuff live, you kind of get what you get, you know? When you're a documentary filmmaker, at least in my point of view on it, you want to let them tell the story. You know, you don't need to coach them into really doing anything. If you're smart enough to be able to catch them in the moment, then, of course, you're going to end up, you know, a lot of times getting – you know, the emotions that you're looking for without trying to lead them into really saying anything. Now, when you sit down and do a documentary style interview, there is a set list of questions that I will go off of course. And in that case, those questions are meant to elicit certain responses because, you know what you're looking for. You know what you need for the film to complete it so that, you know, the viewer gets the best experience and the best understanding of what it was really like to play on this team and play under this particular coach.
Now, I'm not going to ask you to name names here, so don't worry. Did you have one player enjoyed interviewing more than others?
No, you know, they were all really great kids. Now, keep in mind, my son played with all of them in the years prior to that. So it wasn't like I was coming in cold on this and didn't know, you know, them and their families and their, you know, everything around them. I knew them all for a several years period of time already. So, yeah, it wasn't really about so much of an enjoyment. I liked all of them and, you know, it was a really good experience, especially for our first film.
But you have some of the junior players on this team you wouldn't have known. You would have gotten cold on them.
In some cases, yes. You'd be surprised at some of the links to some of these kids, though. I mean, I'll give you an example. One of the fathers of one of the kids in the film was my boss at my police department years before this. And, you know, we kind of talked about it, you know, later on. I was like, wow, I never thought in a billion years, you know, now years later, that I'd be making a movie that in part centers around your kid, you know. So, I mean, yeah, there were kind of links around that kind of were ironic and worked out. But, yeah, in some cases, you're right. If there was a freshman or sophomore on the team, they wouldn't have played with my son. But then again, there's a junior varsity team as well in high school. And that's where most of those kids were. The majority of the kids that were on the varsity team were juniors and seniors and kids that my son would have played with. So there are a lot of them I already knew.
So how was the school's reaction to your films? I mean, you obviously, I don't want to say principal. I think he had a different name. Did you have to go speak to him before you even started filming, or you went through the coach first and then went to the school for next?
It's a little bit of both. I mean, you know, when you're going to do a film like that, I mean, it's a private school, so you're not really dealing with a school district, so to speak. So, you know, the buck kind of stops with, you know, first the coach, of course, but then, of course, the principal of the school. Yeah, and you know, you just do what your standard documentary filming playbook. You get the releases from all the parents for the kids, all the coaches, and then location permit for the schools that you're going to film at, you know, dealing with those different principals. But yeah, I mean, it was, wasn't something that was, you know, looked upon it as something that would be negative. That wasn't really the point of it. The point of it, as I told you, was to kind of show the audience, what an NBA player with that kind of pedigree would do with high school kids. And you think about this, this is a guy with his accomplishment, as he has said many times, you know, if he wanted to, he could go be an assistant coach in the NBA or at a high-level college program. When you talk to him, to Doug Lee, you're talking to somebody who knows all of the greats, all of the very well-known people within that industry. And yet here he is, you know, his path takes him to coaching a small Christian school. And you know, that's where I thought the story was. It's like, you know, you could be doing so much more in the basketball realm, but you choose to be here. There has to be a reason.
Okay. But in your film, I would say you really get us right in the beginning. Tell us what Doug Lee's intention is, why he's doing what he's doing. I like that. I like the passion you let Doug Lee. He let you tell his story, and you really framed it well, and I thought in your shot. Did you cut any of that interview, or that's pretty much what he said?
No, that is what he said. Yeah, I mean, you have to remember when you're dealing with somebody like this, I mean, somebody who has played at that level, they deserve that respect, you know, and you in a sense are, you know, that conduit that is going to bring forth their thoughts to the world. And you would never want to do anything that would change, you know, what his true intentions were. And I wanted that to be genuine. I wanted that to come out and really show people, you know, what the experience was like for these kids, you know, and something I might do in the future, maybe just as like a YouTube video or something, is just a retrospective and show where some of these kids have gone. Because remember, the whole crux of this at the end, because of course the team does not go on to win the state championship. Nope. They make the playoffs for only the second time in their school's history. The first time was the year before when my son was a senior. It's that you can use the skills that he is teaching you in life. You know, you can translate what he taught you. Sure, you applied it on the basketball court at the time, but they're the same skills that you will use to succeed in college and as an adult and whatever jobs you take. I mean, those skills of discipline and accountability and you know, teamwork are huge, as we all know.
So what was Doug's reaction to the film? When you've got the film finished, I presume you showed it at the school. It was your first showing, would be my guess.
Actually, no. My first showing, right in my living room with Doug, his wife, and the entire team, all sat in my living room, and we watched it. Yeah, for the first time, and then we had a school showing about a month later. It was fantastic. It was a really good feeling because, again, you know, with me going into this, it's like, I'll tell you, I've done several since, okay, but that was my first, and there was more than one time where I thought, man, did I bite off more than I could chew? Because here you are, you're filming nearly 100 hours of footage, and it's all well and great when you're shooting it, and you're going through the, you know, the emotions of the team, and you're like, wow, this is going to be really good. But the fact is, you don't really visit that until post-production, or I should say revisit that. So now you're like, oh, my God, I have to turn this into something that, you know, forms a cohesive narrative that people will understand. And, to see their reaction, as you can imagine, that was more important to me than anything, because not just the coach, but the players as well. I wanted it to be a fair representation of what they went through, the highs and the lows.
This may be something I missed. Did every player get an interview? I'm not sure, because I don't know how many players are on a basketball team.
Well, in this case, yes. Every player, I at least tried to interview all of them after games. They didn't all do the documentary style interview that I kind of used throughout to just give perspective on certain events that occurred. But I tried to do post-game interviews with all of them at one point during the season so I could make sure I got them into the film.
I always think maybe the players, did you ever think they talked about you a lot after their interview, saying, hey, I did my interview. Have you done yours?
You know, I don't know. I'm not really sure if that would have happened or not. You know, to be honest with you, knowing kids these days and high school kids, they have so many things going on. You know, I think it's fair to say that they are really more into themselves than anything, you know, at that age. And I think they thought it was just really cool that, maybe if they watch their favorite NBA game at the end of it, what happens? You know, the star player gets interviewed by some sideline reporter or whatever. That's kind of the feeling they probably got at the time. And, yeah, I mean, they thought it was cool. And, you know, as you saw, they said some interesting things.
They did. You had a lot of old footage on here of Doug. I found you did a lot of digging. I mean, did Doug give you that footage or did you go find it yourself?
It was a combination of both. Yeah, I mean, he at one point gave me that was just another massive project or side project to all of this because, yeah, you really had to show who he was, you know, I mean, who he played for, the fact that he went to Purdue at a time when Purdue was a national power, the fact that he was drafted in the NBA. I mean, you figure in an NBA draft, there's only 60 people internationally, not just in the United States, that are drafted each year. And he was one of them in 1987. So very, very big accomplishment. And I wanted to show where he came from all the way through being a star high school player in Illinois, all the way through going to Purdue. And, you know, he had some highs and lows, too. I mean, no one's life is perfect. And obviously there are going to be some things that, you know, come up that, you know, different types of adversity you have to deal with. And I think that that's what kind of, you know, helped him through. And I really loved how he passed that on to the kids. But yeah, at one point he gave me like a banker's box filled with photos and, you know, old technology like VHSC and beta tapes and stuff. So yeah, I had to kind of go through all of that and, you know, pull the things that I could you know, from some of his most important games and throughout his NBA career, without spending too much time on it. But I wanted the audience to have a firm grasp as to who this guy was before we see what he does.
Good. You leave me my next question personally. You rely on the narrator to tell us a story, not interviews. I do find that a lot of documentarians will just let the interviewees talk and we follow them, but you didn't do that. The narrator leads me. Was that always your plan, or is that late in the game?
You know, that actually always was my plan. You know, I know what you're saying. There's, I guess, different ways to skin a cat. I've seen a lot of documentaries. I'm sure we all have, you know, in this day and age. And you know, you see some with a narrator and you see some without. Like, you know, for example, a recent one that had a narrator that I was thought was really effective on Disney Plus, what was that called? It was like a 6-part series that talked about how all the rides at Disneyland were constructed.
Yeah, but I know what you're talking about. Magic Kingdom or something it's called.
Anyway, Angela Bassett, the actress, she's the narrator, and it's very effective. So, yeah, different ways to do it. And since you brought that up, you know, since the Basketball Family, I made a film called The Wounded Blue, a film called Repeat Offender, and a docuseries called Voices of the Blue. All of them, I use that narrator style. So I haven't gone into the way that you're talking about where there is no narrator and the movie just kind of goes through with the people talking as being just, you know, the ones interviewed.
I quite enjoyed the basketball graphic. I don't know how else to describe it. Where did that idea come from?
What do you mean?
You have like a basketball glowing almost on your screen on the fixtures when you're doing the games and you're introducing things. It's a little basketball logo.
Oh, yeah. You mean just kind of talking about the team, yes, like the lower third?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, it's just a lower third, that you can get from an editor's tool bag. You know, a lot of them are going to be sports themed.
I have to ask, you know that. Music. How did you decide on music? I mean, it's a documentary. I mean, you don't really have a feeling involved at times.
Well, again, it just kind of comes from the editor's toolkit. You know, when you talk about trying to make documentary films, we know that music is going to be in part something that drives the emotion of the film, you know, to show the elation of making a game-winning basket all the way down to, you know, losing a game. Maybe you thought you should have won. And music is very important in telling that story. Me personally, for that film back then, I got music from a lot of different sources, one of which is called Digital Juice. It's something I'd gotten a lifetime subscription to years and years ago that has a whole music library of royalty-free music that you can use for your films. Nowadays, I use a site that I would recommend to any budding filmmaker. It's called Premium Beat. And they have tracks for as low as $49 that are, again, you can use them anytime you want on any project once you buy the license for it. And I love their music. It's really high quality, and I've used it in the last 3 films.
So I want to thank you again. For somebody that watches basketball but doesn't know a lot about the psychology of basketball, I want to thank you for that. I find that was great in the film. When you have Doug explaining to us how plays work and the psychology behind things, I want to thank you because I've never seen that before in a basketball film. It's showing me how things work. And I think that was really good as a viewer. I want to point that out to you. And was that your plan, to explain to the uneducated like me how basketball theory works?
Well, you know, I don't know. I guess that could be a positive byproduct to watching it. I mean, my thinking was, like I said before, I just was very intrigued by his methodology and how he coached these young men and had this idea that, you know, life is obviously going to be a lot more than basketball. I'm going to teach you things through the game that, you know, ultimately you can use later. And my hope is that you'll be successful by me doing so. I thought that was one of the more important aspects of his mission and what he did, you know, yeah, it kind of comes with the territory, though. When you've got when we're going into the timeouts and we're looking at drawing up plays and everything, absolutely, you're going to learn quite a bit about the game. it probably in a way that, you know, you don't really get told a lot, you know? I mean, a lot of people are just kind of assume that you know. And I think this is a film that, like you said, really gives a lot of details that get missed in other works.
So you're also at time. I want to know, how much setup do you do pregame? How many cameras are you shooting?
Actually, that entire film was just a one camera shoot. All I did was I mic'd up the coach so that I'd have his audio, obviously, and everything else was captured. The game action was captured with a shotgun mic. So, yeah, I mean, again, first film, the idea was, I guess for lack of a better term, it was kind of like my film school. Let me just say that I'm not going to say that I watched that film today and I cringe, because I don't. I'm very proud of it. But at the same time, I see so many things that I would have done differently if I was to do it again. Because, again, you know, having had the opportunity to make three other films since then, I can tell you that everything you learn on one, you apply to the next, both good and bad.
You have a lot of shots in Las Vegas. Were they helicopter or drone shots?
Those are drone shots. And yeah, I mean, obviously, that was one of the things, you know, when you think the coach's reaction that he thought was genius was, I don't look at it that way, but it was just his perception of it. He's thinking, here you're showing what people think Las Vegas is, which it, by all rights, is. It is, you know, the Las Vegas Strip and downtown and Sin City and all that kind of thing. But yet you're showing that, in fact, regular, normal people do indeed live here. We don't all live in hotels that, you know, surrounding the Strip is a city of 2 million people that live normal lives like any other city or town.
Was there any other time you thought maybe interviewing some parents, or that was never on the board? It was always about the school and the kids.
Yeah, you know, it was about the school, the kids, and the coach, you know, and the school had a very interesting history. I mean, they had been around for, I don't remember how many years, but I know that they had a period of time where they never won a game for like over a decade, had never sniffed the playoffs at all. And when Doug came over, he only coached there 5 years. This season that is depicted in the film was his final season. And he brought that team from literally a nobody team to a playoff team in my son's senior year to a playoff team the very next year as well that's depicted in the movie. So he brought a certain level of success to it.
Well, since now I know, I'm going to have one last question, then we'll go into fun questions. Have you maintained your relationship with anybody on the team and with the coaches?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. You know, I mean, obviously, as you know, the way you found it is I tweet about the film still and all of the players, and I interact on Twitter. You know, even young people are really into social media, obviously, so that's kind of a no-brainer. And, yeah, I can certainly call Doug at any given time and just – talk about life and, you know, what we're doing. And, you know, there's nothing to say that someday we might not, you know, do another project because, yeah, this one was something that was good for everybody. And everybody agrees, you know, has a very positive message.
Okay. It's time for some fun questions. If you're ready, I know you've prepped for them.
Okay. Shoot.
As your first time on the show, I always have to ask everybody what their favorite film is.
Oh, my goodness. My favorite movie of all time is Aliens, because I am a James Cameron disciple. In fact, you know what? I always like to quote him because any person who is listening right now that's thinking about making a movie, this is what inspired me, was James Cameron, when he said, if you want to get into making films, then pick up a camera and point it at something and make a movie. Don't let anything stop you. Don't think you can't do it because, you know, you don't have this budget or you don't have all these connections, because the fact of the matter is, if you've got a good idea and you can film it, that could flourish and become, blossom into so many better things for you rather than just letting that idea stay in your head. And I've always remembered that. But yes, Aliens, Alien, Ridley Scott's original, is number 7 on my all-time list, but Aliens is number 1.
Your favorite sport other than basketball?
Baseball. Big San Diego Padres fan.
Your last question. So this is your first film. What advice would you give to somebody starting their first film?
The first advice would be what I just talked about, the Cameron quote. I mean, you, if you've got a great idea, if you have a story to tell, I mean, geez, things, how much have things changed? If you've got the new iPhone 12 Pro Max, you basically have a film studio in your pocket. I mean, that's the reality of today, which is wonderful because it lets virtually anybody do that. And then on top of that, there's so many platforms, you know, like YouTube is the main example, which you can put your work on and let everybody see. So no excuse really at this point if you've got a great idea. Now, if you're going to get into the feature filmmaking side of things, it's a long, arduous process. I mean, each one of my films probably took anywhere between the pre-production, the conception of the idea, the shooting of the film, and then the editing process, you know, anywhere from 6 months to a year each of just dedication of working these 10-hour days, sitting in front of this computer and you know, honing your craft and putting something together that, you know, people will like. The last thing I would say is just be very wary of distributors. That is the pitfall of all independent filmmakers. I've got some horror stories. Probably no need to share them now, but let me just tell you that if it's too good to be, sounds too good to be true, then it most definitely is. There are a lot of sharks out there. You know, I come from the police world as a retired police sergeant here in Las Vegas, and I can tell you that the film world, particularly as it deals with distributors, is more cutthroat than the police world was, if you can believe that. It's really, sometimes it's a tough pill to swallow, but yeah, people will not care about you. So there are a lot of tools in place that you can distribute your own films and get your own audience. You don't need somebody else to come in and steal your movie and take all the money.
Okay. But before we let you go, we haven't told anybody where they can find your film.
Well, best place to look at any of my work is my website. It's lightningdigitalentertainment.com. And there you can, if you'd like to rent or purchase at various places, iTunes, Google Play, Microsoft, Amazon, of course, you can see my films, The Wounded Blue and Repeat Offender. The Basketball Family, I already had its run for several years on Amazon. I'll give it away for free now on Vimeo. So the film we've been talking about, if you'd like to watch that, there's a page on my site dedicated to it with the link to watch the film for free. And my latest is a docuseries about injured and disabled police officers called Voices of the Blue. That's exclusively on the Wounded Blue TV YouTube channel. And you can watch that for free, obviously, as well. So plenty of places, but yep.
Thank you for your time and have a great day.
All right. Thank you, sir.